official post-match show. Everyone around the world tuned in. They want to know what's up. What do the boys think? Wild action in Group F today. The group of death and nerves in England, I can guarantee you that. We all know fans of England, whether they're from England or not, they jump on that bandwagon, and their history is just like the Maple Leafs. Tons of hype, lots of rowdy fans, and then the team falls on their face at some point. They've got Germany in the round of 16, so your boy, your boy Yogi Löw will be scratching and sniffing away at Wembley Stadium.
I echo the sentiments of Andy Petrillo. The group of death is everything it's thought to be.
She's right. Andy knows what's up. Andy knows what's up. So we got a couple of barn burners in the next round. Portugal will play Belgium. Do you have both those teams, Noodles?
I do. So, I mean, one of them is going home. I have Belgium, Portugal, Hungary, and Spain. So I think it's
Hungary's out. They
Hungary,
were close.
Yeah, they got the gate. They were close.
Yep, they were close.
I don't know. Belgium.
You got three. You got three through.
Yeah,
three
Spain's
tickets.
In. Like, I'm feeling pretty good. What do you have? You have England, Germany, Scotland, and Denmark. So who
yes.
made it through for you?
Denmark made it through, and it's Germany and England. So I'm in the same spot. You know,
yeah,
we're guaranteed
basically.
A ticket through to the final eight. I'll take that. Guaranteed
and
into the quarters.
Oh, dog, France, Italy, Poland, and the Netherlands.
Oh, man, am I looking good. And you watch out for those Poles. They
really?
Are dangerous.
They are dangerous.
All four of yours are through?
No, I believe they're on their way home. I'm pretty sure Poland is on their way home.
What?
I don't think they made it through. They're not through the round of 16.
I was like, I don't remember Poland, like, dominating. Like, keep an eye on those Poles.
That
for what?
That Al's brother, it was Al's brother, my buddy the Haste Man, said, take Poland. They're dangerous.
Yeah. Dangerous. Already.
Well, I mean, listen, this I've been doing the math on the group of deaths, so don't quote me on that. But I'm fairly sure that Poland, yeah, they're out, man. They had 1 point. They lost twice and they drew once. They're done. Poland's on the way home. See you later. So we all have three tickets on the way through, and that's what matters. And we've got the Travelers this weekend. We've got to sneak in some picks later this afternoon. But we got a jam-packed show because Bobby Webster's coming on at 5:30. Not quite number one for Cade Cunningham, but real close. And watching and reading mock drafts last night, I don't even want Cade Cunningham. I want one of the Jalens at four. That's where I'm at. Jalen Green or Jalen Suggs. And it all makes sense now. The tank keeping Lowry for whatever reason. Everything coming up Raptors last night. I love it.
I mean, keeping Lowry for whatever reason, that
are you
one,
talking
I, that doesn't
about
make
an
sense.
Organizational changing player here, like...
Well,
what
possibly.
Are we talking
potentially,
about?
Potentially. They took Chris Bosh, went fourth overall. Bosh was a franchise player, one of
Hell
the five
player.
Best players in franchise history, for sure. I don't know. I mean, they're kids. Like, who knows? It could be – it's a hit-or-miss draft. I mean, quite literally, that's what it is. You're going to put all your eggs into the basket of a 19-year-old kid, 20-year-old kid, hope it pans out. The Raptors are known to think differently and maybe scout differently. Maybe they go off the board. You know, we'll ask Bobby Webster about that because everyone's like, it's a four-player draft. It's either Cunningham or Mobley or one of the Jalens. And watch, they'll take some other kid with the fourth pick and everyone's head will explode. And they'll say, how could you possibly do that? Meanwhile, no one's seen any of them play. It's just based on mock drafts, right? Chad Ford has a mock draft. And you're like, okay, well, that's who they have to take it for. And we'll see what Bobby Webster can tell us about that. And based on his presser last night, it sounds like they're in Chicago for the scouting combine, but they're out at a bar last night watching it. Like, you know exactly where they are. They're on the main strip in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Which, as far as we know, is alive and well and rocking on a Monday night, I guess it was, last night, or Tuesday
Viagra Triangle right there, like right by Hugo Frogs and Gibson Steakhouse and Lux Bar, and that place is just hopping. Who knows? I doubt it would be. COVID is different. I don't know what Chicago and downtown looks like. But I'll tell you what, if it was a Sunday or Monday, I'm taking you guys to Stanley's.
Yes.
That place, live band karaoke.
best steakhouses in the States are in Chicago, man.
Yeah, you're
they've
right.
They've got the best spots, whether Harry Carey's got the spot, Ditka's got a spot.
Yeah, you're right.
Jordan, I believe, has a spot. I think MJ's got a place,
Nine.
Right?
Yeah. Jordan
and
does it.
There's just so many great steakhouses and just great restaurants all throughout Chicago. So I guess Bobby and the crew were there. I'm assuming Masai was there. So we'll catch up with Bobby Webster in about 25 minutes. And Ray will join us here in just a moment. And the Montreal Canadiens did it again last night. Like, that was a perfect game. Like, that was more impressive than what Tampa did a couple of nights ago, in my opinion, because what Tampa did was they turned the lights out on the Islanders, and then about halfway through the game, the Islanders packed up their bags and said, we're leaving. Like, Thank you. We don't care anymore. Vegas never did that. It was a tight game throughout, and Vegas never got through, and Montreal never allowed them to get through. But it's not like the Habs could ever feel that comfortable, and yet they never missed an assignment. They were perfect last night.
You tweeted it, and you said that's clinical from the Montreal Canadiens. And Dave Poulin does a lot of their games and watches them from the press box or wherever they do the games from.
Yeah.
And he even said it. He's like, that's probably the best game they played this playoffs. So that means it's probably the best game they played all year. And people got to stop with one thing that I think is nonsense. They still, and I don't understand it in this industry, like we're looking for a Canadian team to do well, to have success, to have content, to talk about it, to write about. And people are still sticking with the narrative that the North Division was garbage and they shouldn't be there. Who cares? Even if the North Division was terrible, you can't take away from what the Montreal Canadiens are doing right now. They were awesome last night. The Vegas offense sucks. They're playing with a 2-7 offsuit offensively right now because they got nothing going on.
Terrible.
But you've got to give a ton of credit to Montreal because that is as good as you can play defensively and structurally and take away offense and frustrate. But people got to stop with the garbage about, they had no business. Some people that were in the industry saying they just shouldn't even be here, period. How could you be saying that?
Well, two things that you brought up that I'd like to address. The other one, the North Division didn't suck. Like Connor
it was
McDavid,
the same as every other.
It
was
even if it did, Jamie. It don't take away from what they're doing on the ice right now. They're playing great,
amazing. That's my point. That's one because every division had bottom feeders. Every division had teams that had injuries and inconsistencies and COVID and all of that. So
I don't care if they
narrative.
Came out of the East Coast League. They're playing damn good hockey.
Well,
you shouldn't take that away from them.
So that I'm debunking. I'm actually agreeing with you. I'm saying 100% the North Division didn't stink. And then secondly, the Canadians deserve the accolades because of how well they're playing. Right now, regardless of how they arrived or how they limped into the playoffs, I agree with Dave Poulin. I thought that was their best game of the year, and I watched every one of their games. I thought they were brilliant last night because I thought Vegas was going to take them to the woodshed like Tampa broke through the other night. And it was the exact opposite.
Never happened. And the best compliment I think you can give the Montreal Canadiens is Carey Price was irrelevant last night. Like, he had nothing to do with the outcome. He did what he was supposed to.
He had a couple good saves.
But he's supposed to. The point being is, if you had have told me, if we're playing that game 2 months ago, they're in this spot, I'd say Price made 45 stops every game and put forth the greatest performance we've ever seen. They're not up 3-2 because of Carey Price. They're up 3-2 because they've been better. Period. End of story. Case dismissed, as some might say. Here's Ray Ferraro joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. I'm sure you see it the same way, Ray, or for the most part, but what has been most impressive for you about the Habs?
I think they have – I'm going to say everyone. I'm sure there's been somebody, but they have everybody playing as close to as well as they can at the same time. I mean, I think it's remarkable. Like, I would – they got guys, almost the whole roster's playing within, to pick a number, like 10% of the best of their games. Like, they just – it doesn't matter. It seems they need a goal. Kotkaniemi scores for the first time in forever the other night. And, you know, Caulfield's giving them some juice. Those big D are doing just what they envisioned them doing. Like, it's been super impressive. Like, they're not a fluke. Like, they deserve to be here. Yeah. They were awful coming down the stretch, right? Like, somebody had something last night. If Calgary would have beaten Ottawa twice more, Montreal wouldn't have been in the playoffs. Like, it was that close. And yet it doesn't matter anymore. Man, remember a couple years ago, St. Louis was in dead last. They fired the coach. They grabbed the goalie, who wasn't even in their organization. They didn't want him. They had him as the third goalie in Providence. And then Binnington comes in, Berube comes in, they become the best team, and they win the cup. Like, you don't have to be the best team for 9 months. You got to be the best team at the best time. That's right. What they are right now. In this series, anyway.
You know what? The St. Louis example is one that we have not brought up enough because it's probably a perfect one for the Habs. Now, I don't know if they'll close, and I'm assuming I'll be in a position in a few days where I will apply the exact same prediction that I have in the first round and this round. If they play Tampa, I expect Tampa to win. That doesn't mean they will. That's why you play the games. I thought Vegas would win. I thought the Leafs would win. Winnipeg was a different story. But St. Louis, they got hot at the right time. They were built differently, right? Like, they didn't have superstars. They didn't have guys who, you know, they didn't have McDavid, McKinnon, Sid. They just had a really balanced quality team that was playing almost a perfect system and executed that perfectly. And since that cup win, they've kind of come back to earth a little bit. Like, St. Louis is still good, but they're not great. Yeah. And that's the truth about the Habs. This is not like a dynasty team, but it doesn't matter. It's completely irrelevant, how you feel about them on paper or how you might feel about them next year. They deserve to beat the Leafs. They deserve to beat Winnipeg. They deserve to be up 3-2. This is not a fluke. They're outplaying Vegas.
And add one thing onto that, too. Like, even the way that they're built. Like, you're talking about the goalie, Binnington. Now, Price has been great. But, like, that defensive core, that was one thing I remember we keyed on with St. Louis. Petrangelo, Parayko, like, you know, long and big and mean.
Edmondson
was there. Yeah. Like, you know, they did their job. And I thought that defensive core, because I kept thinking to myself, okay, if they're going to do what everyone says that they're doing, there's going to be a parade to the penalty box last night. And that wasn't the case because both teams adjusted. And Montreal's D still got it done. Sherratt and Weber and Edmondson and Petrie were mean and big. But they got help from their forwards. Like, that's the one thing. Montreal, yeah, they can play gritty and they can play in that gray zone. Well, last night I thought it was going to be a parade to the penalty box just based on, you know, the narrative heading in. There was a couple penalties, and rightfully so, but they adjusted. Like, they deserve to be exactly where they are.
And, man,
they
can kill a penalty, too. Like, Vegas never even came close. And this is the thing about Vegas is where, you know, they're still a very good team. They're in a bad spot. But they are more about, you know, the sum of the parts. They, again, don't have a McDavid or a McKinnon or a Kane. Where in a moment like that, you think, we need a guy going over the boards here who is just going to – he's going to dominate right now. Like, he's going to put us on the board. And you can sense that frustration.
I sense the frustration in the first period. Like, they tried a couple of hope plays, like where you just flip it up and you hope somebody goes and gets it. And I'm like, man, it's like the game's still 1-0. Like, but you could just see the panic and the – tension in their game. Look, they don't have, you know, McDavid, McKinnon, but they do have a top six. Where are they?
I don't know.
Pacioretty's been okay. Pacioretty was good last night, really good last night. But I think one of their best forwards has been Nicholas Waugh. Like, wait a minute, where are the other guys? You can say whatever you want about the goalies. We spent too much time talking about that. And Marchessault, Smith, Stone, Carlson, I'm missing somebody else. They don't have a Pacioretty's got one goal and Stevenson just got back. That's it for their top six. Yeah. And so when we hear all the time about this copycat league and all that stuff, it's not, or it shouldn't be. You should look at your team and say, what do I have and what can I build best around what I have? And for St. Louis, St. Louis had all those big D. Montreal went and got the same thing. They, you know, free agency for Sherratt. They got Edmondson, signed him to a 4-year deal. Petrie, where they traded for 2 second rounders, and they've got Weber in the Subban deal. They, those guys clog up the ice. They're tough to get through, and they score enough. They score enough. It's like it's a, but not every other team can say, "Oh, I'm going to build with the Montreal model." Well, you can't find those guys.
Yeah,
and
right.
It works for them. It works for them.
I wanted to bring up, like, they've done a job not just on Vegas's top six, but if you look at it, you go back right to Toronto. Toronto's top six, Winnipeg's top six, now Vegas's top six. And that's not just those 4D. Like, last night, was it Stone trying to go through the middle? And there were three guys on him. It was
and
like,
that's not
it.
His game. He's trying to dangle through three guys at
like,
the blue
like
line.
They're like a giant snake. They just wrap themselves around the top forwards, and then by the end of the series, all the forwards are just lying on the ice dead. And they
it's
can't
true.
Move.
And then
it
Stone,
is, man.
He kind of dogged the back check. And,
on the Caulfield goal.
Yeah, and like his disposition and what he was showing last night for a captain, I mean...
That's what happens, though, when frustration sets in. You're trying to make something happen. You're putting it on yourself. You're trying to do too much, and ultimately ends up in the back of your net. That's the ultimate sign of frustration right there.
Yep.
One on
instead
three.
Of, instead of playing the way he normally plays.
Exactly.
And they just, like, now they're all trying to fix it themselves, which is death. Like, that's a killer. I'll tell you about the Caulfield thing. The first thing I noticed, Corey Perry had a breakaway. He took one stride, realized he was the slowest guy on the ice, and pulled up and found Caulfield. I thought it was awesome.
It was like a play action.
No, I'm not. I'm now behind everybody, so I'll just pass it over here.
You know,
yeah.
I don't know if you guys noticed this. Like, he is such a K. Did you notice he shot the puck left-handed? Did you see the one time when he went to keep the puck in the offensive zone? He switched his hands around and shot left-handed down the wall. Like, this guy is like, he's playing great hockey. He's really at the top of his game for what he has right now. But it's like these little plays that he's doing. Yeah. The puck sticks
that's
to him.
That's a trained professional pickup. You notice Hazy didn't pick that one up. That's a trained professional.
Dude, if anyone knows shooting left, shooting right, it's me. I didn't just pick up on it. I made a note. But Noodles got to it first.
Did you make a note? Did you seriously make a note of that?
No, I didn't make a note.
Honestly, I was like, what is he doing? And the puck, it was rung around. He kept it in the offensive zone right by the blue line. And instead of going in cross-body and awkwardly maybe getting hit, he shot left and then changed. I was like, this guy's doing it all right
He's
now.
He's doing it all at 7:50. So what is his contract on July 28th when we get to free agency? What
well,
happens
we'll see
with
if somebody
Perry?
Way overpays for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although he did it with Dallas last year and no one did this year.
Like, right, but so you have to realize he can give you what he can, mm-hmm. but don't expect more. It's almost like if you go and say, man, Jason Spezza had 10 goals, he had an unreal year, we're going to give him $4 million, you're going to be disappointed.
I would say if I was Corey Perry, don't talk to me until March, and if you want to sign me till something, I'll try to figure out something, I'll rest, and I'll be ready for the playoffs, and there you go. He was a healthy scratch a bunch of times at the beginning of the year for Montreal. Why would he want to put himself through? All you want him for is the playoffs and getting in there.
Well, keep in mind, in Dallas, I think he had 5 goals in the regular season. That's, I mean, he was unbelievable in the playoffs, but it's timing. Like, Eric Staal down the stretch from Montreal looked his age. He realizes the magnitude of the situation, and I think he's been fantastic. Like, he is so strong on the puck, and he's got a little bit of bite to his game. I didn't realize, like, oh,
Noodles,
you know him better than anybody?
Noodles, especially when we saw at the beginning of the year in Buffalo. That whole team in Buffalo, I don't know what the hell, if it was COVID or what it was, but they were all awful, and Staley included. He couldn't move out there. And now, what a goal last night. And him and his line mates, they're just dynamite down low. They're a handful,
everything
man.
Is
it's
just,
the perfect storm is what it is.
And it's off the rush. Like, the first goal is, you know, Anderson on
that
a semi-breakaway. And, yeah, like, it's a two – I guess it wasn't off the rush, the Staal goal, but it kind of got drawn. He's in the slot wide open. Caulfield, slot wide open. Like, the first three goals, slot wide open, more or less. Yeah. You know, just waiting to pounce. And Caulfield does it again last night. Like, this is – you talk about making a first impression. He was getting a lot of hype anyway, but can you imagine what they're going to be thinking his projection will be for next year after he has a taste like this?
probably think he's going to lead the team in goals with
maybe
35
goals next year.
Exactly, Hazy.
I think we lost Ray about 10 minutes ago.
Honestly, you
know what? Good, it was a good point by you, though.
Chat, great point.
Yeah,
but,
good
you know,
good
I was
point
pick,
by you, though, Brian.
Thank you.
I was going to pick up on that, too, though. Like, their three kids that are 21 and under last night were fantastic. That's Kotkaniemi,
yep.
Caulfield, and Suzuki. And, you know, that is what you're getting a glimpse of. Now, they may all take a step back next year. You know, regular season is different, expectations, all of that. But when you look at it, that's why you have the Toffolis and Andersons and that around these young kids, because you hope that if there is some stumble, that those veterans can drag you up. The other thing I'll say is that Phil Deneau doesn't score, but, man, he is. I think he's one of the best checkers I've seen in a long time.
Always on the right side of the puck, wins battles. You know, it's never flashy. It's just the right play all the time, or it seems that way. We've got Ray back. Let's switch gears here. We had a great – we left you hanging there. Or you left us hanging. I made a comment.
I don't know, all of a sudden I'm listening to Noodles talk about Corey Perry, and I'm like, oh, yeah, and I go to chime in, and Noodles keeps going, and I'm like – I don't think they can hear me. And
no,
then my phone went dead.
Oh, Corey Perry was 5 minutes ago. We were on to Caulfield and the Bell Center.
We were saying all kinds of cool stuff, and then we were waiting for you to chime in, and we're like, what the hell is this, Wayne's World? Nobody's saying anything.
I'm going to have to check in on the podcast later on. I'm going to have to check it out, man.
It was really good, and it was just on riveting. A team for you. It was Caulfield, and then we let it breathe for like 3 seconds, and we're like, Ray's not here, and he's been gone for 5 minutes. But what about your Islanders tonight? Any chance that they can put it back together or what?
Yeah, I think they can. I don't think they're going to fall apart. And like that was a debacle the other night. But I just think Tampa's too good. I think everything that the Islanders can do, Tampa does just a little bit better, has just a little bit more depth. Man, the Islanders are a pain, though. Man, they'd be brutal to play against because nothing is going to be, you know, they're not going to lay down. But I think Tampa wins tonight. I mean, hell, the Islanders could win. It should be a madhouse in there again. This could be the last game ever at the Coliseum. But I just think Tampa's too good.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone in that. I think most people are expecting that. I think even if you're down in New York, you're probably expecting it. But I wouldn't be shocked if the Islanders came up flying tonight and Tampa just kind of wears them down, and by the end of the game, somehow they win. You know, that's what they do, 3-2, 4-3, and then we reset. We see where we're at for Game 6 back in Montreal. All right, buddy, we'll leave it there. Good stuff, as always. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Thanks. Talk to you later, boys. See ya.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lean history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. So last night was a crazy night watching the Habs game, the Blue Jays, you know, with a big win last night, and the bullpen held it together. Your boy Chatwood, Mesa, Romano, and Springer didn't do much, which is fine. You know, he was 0-for-4, and he wasn't overly busy, but he's easing back into it with a win, and they're back at it tonight. Robbie Ray on the mound. So we're watching that. There's crazy stuff going on around baseball with this searching for foreign substances stuff.
What an absolute circus they've got on their hands.
Yeah.
That's redonkulous.
It's embarrassing because what you're seeing now is the pitchers, who are also embarrassing themselves, acting like children. Like Sergio Romo last night taking his pants off. Like, grow up. It's a new rule. It's been around for like 2 days.
Yeah, but Scherzer three times.
That's goofy,
man.
And that's on
Come
Girardi.
On.
And Girardi should know better. He's a former player. He's a former catcher.
No. The ump's got to know better to say, Joe, go stuff it. You're not doing it a third time. Sorry.
But it's go talk to Rob Manfred. Like, they implemented these new rules a third of the way through the season, and this is technically allowed.
Okay, so, well, then Bobby Manz has got another spicy meatball on his hands.
Of course.
That totally, completely butchered.
Absolutely, and he did it himself, and the league did it themselves. And this is what they've all been saying, and we all agree with it. If you're going to do it, yes, I think they've got to get the foreign substances either under control. They cannot allow it to be weaponized the way it has been. You cannot have guys throwing 99 miles an hour when they should be throwing 91 or 92 naturally. That's cheating. But allow a full offseason to figure out the right formula. Let the pitchers figure it out. Come up with the right plan, because this is an embarrassment. Mm-hmm. So it's stupid. Girardi embarrassed themselves last night. Scherzer was pissed, and I get it. Romo was being – that's just being an idiot, though. Like, we get it. You're not happy, but This is the rule. Don't blame the ump. And, like, look at this guy. Pants yeah. off, belt down. Like, grow up. There's people in the stands. Like, but we get dude, it, dude. You're not happy. But
when you're playing by the rules and you're just fed up with this nonsense and you're being questioned for your integrity, that's the response you're going to get.
Yeah. Well,
I know, but I think
there's a more mature response. But I understand why the pitchers who are doing it clean are pissed, you know, yeah. and unhappy here. So something's got to be taken care of tonight. So you had that, and then the draft lottery last night where – for like when it came to seven and the Raptors didn't come up, you're like, here we go. They've moved up. They're into the top four. And then it was somewhat anticlimactic because right when they get back to it, the card flips and the Raptors are at four. But still, 7-4 is huge value, right? That's a big jump. So Bobby Webster will join us, the GM of the Raptors, get his take on the experience last night watching it. Why was it Fred VanVleet, not Bobby, last night? He could have been there, or at least over Skype. And what does this mean for the offseason? How does it change the upcoming plans? That and more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, it was a big night for the Raptors last night. They moved up from the seventh spot in the draft. That's where they were supposed to go based on the standings. They get into the lottery. They end up picking fourth. And that, I think, makes it all worthwhile. I mean, it was a difficult season. They weren't home at any point.
Tampa Bay Lightning all the time, Hazy. Have a crap year. You know what? Just load up from it and benefit from it and get back at it.
Exactly. Yep. And the last time they picked fourth, Chris Bosch. That worked out pretty well for them. And Bosch will join us on Monday, actually. So I think it was a pretty good night for Bobby Webster and company, yep. not only because they won the lottery and picked fourth, but they were in Chicago, one of our favorite cities, out for dinner at a bar, living life. It's a beautiful
thing. Let's just get right to it and ask them who they're taking it for. Come on.
Yeah. You want to pose that question? All right.
Oh, here's bring him in here.
The GM of the Raptors, Bobby Webster. How you doing, Bobby?
What's up, everyone? Yeah, I'll reveal the pick on air right now. How about that?
Yes.
Go ahead, buddy. Who is it? Fourth pick, the Toronto Raptors, Bobby Webster. Please make your selection for us.
Well, I appreciate having me on, so thanks.
Yes, okay, we'll leave it there. That's who you're taking. We have to find him on Real GM or on a mock draft somewhere. Thank you for having me on. I think he's out there. I think he's a collegiate player. You were in Chicago last night. You got to hang out at a bar watching that last night. What was the experience like for you when the card flipped at seven? It wasn't the Raptors. What was running through your mind?
Yeah, you know, it's a bit stressful evening, as you can imagine. You know, we're all sitting there yesterday, and we're in Chicago with the rest of the NBA, and so – we're all sitting there saying, you know, our futures depend on these small little ping pong balls. So it wasn't fun. But yeah, as soon as seven flips over and it's not, you know, the Raptors logo, you know, you're in the top four. So a couple of high fives, a couple of hugs, and then you get the commercial break and you get to see where you are. Obviously, the suspense ended quickly there at four, but just making that jump for us was meaningful for the franchise. And I think, as I said last night, and you guys alluded to, it was a bit of a silver lining on a tough season for everybody.
How big of a hug do you give to move up to that four spot, Bobby? Is it like go time now hug, or is it what kind of hug are we talking about when you get to the four spot?
I don't know if it's a go time, but it's a pretty good hug. It's a pretty good emotional release, if that's what you guys are looking for.
Yeah, well, you
weren't
alone.
That's a good hug.
I think every Raptor fan was thinking the same thing. I mean, the Raptor fans haven't been used to this experience in a long time, yourself included, right? Like, you guys have been a perennial playoff team, a championship contender, and this year, for a multitude of reasons, it got away from you. I don't know if this would make it worth it in the end, but how now that you know you moved up to four and you got the fourth pick and what is supposed to be a pretty deep draft, a quality draft, certainly a top four or top five draft, how do you look back on the whole season now considering what you found out last night?
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't make up for, you know, a tough season, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. And I think as you guys can all appreciate, you know, as soon as the season ended and we had a little bit of space to reflect on the year, I think, you know, there was a lot of pauses that came out of the year, and having this, you know, piece here to move forward with, I think is, you know, adds to that. And so, doesn't make up for it, but definitely helps and puts us in a direction that, you know, fortunately we haven't been in the past. And we don't plan to be, you know, too often in the future. And so having this pick definitely increases the odds of, you know, either finding a really impactful player in the draft that can come and you know, complement the core, or it's a, you know, valuable piece in the trade market as you look to find other players that, you know, fit with our group.
Well, in terms of the trade market, I think every GM, every team, including Detroit, I would assume, are willing to accept calls. But how does that, you know, interaction work? Is it now that you know where you're at and everyone knows where they're slotted, are you picking up the phone, calling teams and finding out what they feel about four or how they feel about four? Or are you just simply accepting calls and you're going to let them know how much you love the fourth pick? How does this work between now and draft night?
You know, it goes both ways, right? I mean, there's teams that are interested in four. There's teams that want to move up. There's teams that want to add a pick of that caliber. And then for us, you know, we got to do our due diligence, and you're not exactly sure who's going to be there for. So you got to have some, you know, alternative and some, you know, plan B. So I think for us, it'll go both ways. Obviously, we're not there yet. I think everyone's kind of digesting the news from last night and coming up with their, you know, their strategy and who they want and how to play this thing out. But, you know, as we approach July 29th, a lot of that chatter will pick up as far as, you know, keep it, take the player, you know. Oftentimes it's, you know, well, who's there, you know, we'll make the decision on the clock, which is, you know, even more fun. You got 5 minutes and you're going to take the player, you're going to trade it. And then there's another team going to, you know, take a player. They want to trade it. So that's the fun of it. It's a challenge. It's, you know, why we're here and we look forward to it.
We're chatting with Bobby Webster, the GM of the Raptors. The Raps getting into the lottery last night. They will pick fourth at the NBA draft. And I love mock drafts, and I love feeling as if I'm informed, even though I know I'm not. I wasn't in the gym watching these guys.
I don't get it. Like, people that you don't even know are just making up mock. I don't
understand.
It's
the best. Today, every Raptor fan is convinced you have to take Jalen Green or Evan Mobley or take a reach. You know, you got to take a kid out of Turkey or something like that. Like, how do you respond to the information process here, Bobby, where you guys are going to come up with your own board, your scouts are going to break it down for you, but you know the way this is going to work out? Like, you know it's Cunningham, Mobley, and the two Jalens. Everyone's convinced that's the top four. Do you care about any of that? Do you follow any of that? Or do you just try to isolate yourself and say, we're going to do whatever we feel is best at four, and if it's a player that no one's heard of before, so be it?
I think everybody knows us. We make the decisions, you know, that we feel are best for the organization. It's fun, you know, the mock drafts, the constant speculation, that's what keeps the interest. The fans love it. But for us, you know, we trust, you know, the work we've done all year. We obviously knew this was a potential once the season ended that we can move up. So you continue to do your homework. But, you know, as long as we feel the process that, you know, we've developed internally, that's what we'll stick to. We'll enjoy it from, I think, a fan perspective as well. We'll leave all the commentary to you all.
Okay, yeah. You make sure you listen to us. We'll have a full mock draft leading up to it. I'm sure it'll change your mind somehow, one way or the other, with Bobby Webster, the GM of the Raptors. So how do you turn this around as quickly as possible, which I know is the goal? I mean, you guys 2 years ago won a championship. A year ago, or just over a year ago, you had the second-best points percentage in the NBA. This year it got away from you and got away from you quickly. You start 2-8, and you never got really back on the rails. And then when COVID hit you, that was basically it. But how much heavy lifting are we talking about here for you guys to get back to the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, it's a good question. We're not going to put a timeline for ourselves internally. I think obviously the goal is, as you know, is to build championship contending teams, you know, on an annual basis. And so, you know, we feel like we're better than our record. We feel like we're better than what we showed in Tampa. But we do have to do it. And as you know, you've seen there's, you know, younger players stepping into bigger roles, not only on the front line, but even off the bench. So I think we're continuing to see those jumps. And I think if we see, you know, another jump next year, then we're having that conversation. We get to add a fourth pick kind of caliber player to the mix, and we have free agency. So I think, you know, there's a few more pieces to fit together, but we don't think we're that far away.
Where do things stand with Kyle Lowry in his upcoming free agency?
You know, I think we've you know, spoke pretty extensively about how important Kyle is to our franchise, and whether it was a trade deadline or end of the season. Obviously, we'll have those conversations when appropriate with Kyle, but he knows how much he means to the organization.
With Bobby Webster, you were asked about Masai last night and his role in all this, and you said it's the exact same. You know, he's doing what he's always been doing. How often do you and him, you know, disagree on the direction the team should go in, especially with such an active upcoming offseason?
Yeah, Scott, I think disagree is probably not the right characterization. Is talk about it constantly, nonstop, and, you know, he may want to go one way, I may want to go the other way, but I think that's the whole point of the conversation, is not to, you know, have everyone, you know, put yourself in an echo chamber and have everyone, you know, say the same thing. So, you know, generally we're on the same page, but this is kind of the fun. You can challenge each other on what's the proper direction, what's the value, you know, do you take the pick, do you trade the pick, all the things you can imagine, you know, we're talking about on a daily basis.
Well, it was a pretty positive night last night for the Raptors, and I know you guys are still down in the States, but up here there was a lot of buzz about it, and Raptor fans are looking forward to having you guys back in town, which we're all holding out hope. We have to believe that's going to happen. I mean, come September and October, hopefully you're up here at the start of the season for sure. So congrats on getting up into the fourth seed last night, or the fourth spot with the draft, and good luck with the combine, good luck with free agency upcoming, and we'll do this again down the road. Thank you, Bobby.
Definitely. We felt the excitement from the fans, so that was, I think it was cool for us as much as it was cool for them to have some good news, and, you know, we look forward to being back in Toronto as well.
All right, man. We'll do it again soon. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you.
There's Bobby Webster, GM of the Raptors, down in Chicago, and they move up to the fourth seed, and, you know, people asking me today, they're like, you got to ask him about Masai. He's not going to say one thing or the other about Masai and his contractual scenario. I wanted to ask him, though, like, you know, how does it work right now? Are you guys – sounds like they're just going about their business. You know, Masai's still working for the team. He's still here until we hear otherwise.
Still Masai weird, Ujiri, though, man.
It would be, you know, unless they know something we don't. You know, maybe right. It's closer to the finish line than you think, and Masai's told his guys, like, listen, this is a franchise that keeps everything in-house. Nothing really leaks out. So if he's told two or three people within the front office, like, let's keep rolling here and I'm going to be sticking around, Bobby Webster's not calling up, you know, Josh Lewenberg and saying, leak this out, that Masai's got a deal coming. Like, they are pretty ironclad, right? All three big franchises in the city. It's tough to get any real info out of them. Like, the Jays, the Raptors, and the Leafs, they operate pretty much the same across the board.
Yeah, there's, you know, a cone of silence.
It's a real
sure.
cone of silence.
I think it happened more recently when Lou came in. Like, when Lou, like, for... When I first started in Toronto, I felt like, I don't want to say there was leaks, but, you know, Brian Burke was more of a guy who was kind of out front.
He wanted
wasn't
that.
Shy. Yeah, he wasn't
he
shy
that.
To be visual or to be seen and to be heard. And then Lou came in, and you couldn't, if you asked him if he had pizza last night, he would, like, you know, he wouldn't tell you the straight answer. Like, that's just how it was. But, and I feel like he established that, and especially with the Leafs, they've continued that a little bit, you know, Shanny for sure.
Oh, for sure. Well, who did he learn from? I mean, right. Lou was his first GM. Lou was the guy, like, really, when Shanahan got here, it changed almost as much as it did, you know, move that much further when Lamoriello got here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
a lot of teams are like that, though, man.
They
I've talked to guys that I know in organizations. They're like, Jeff, can't tell you because there was four people in the room, and if it comes out, it's going back to one of us, and I'm one of them, so I'm not risking my job.
That's right.
Like, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about, where it's just like, they're not saying it.
Right.
I always find it funny, though, when that same guy calls up and says, hey, there's a job opening. Can you fire my name out there? I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess so.
Right. It's not a two-way street.
No. You know?
Or when the teams all of a sudden do need you, and they're calling up, hey, you think we can come on and talk about this? Oh, really? Because we asked you a question a couple weeks ago, and you for
whatever reason, stinking the joint out, and they're like, hey, don't forget, we got really bad injuries, you know. Take it easy on us.
It's that gets through the grapevine. All of a sudden, the cone of silence gets thrown out the window. Hey, take it easy on us. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, listen, that I don't know if that says something about Toronto or sports in 2021. I think it's the latter. You know, I think it's just...
Yeah, it's just sports in general.
Yeah, it's just that's the way everyone operates. And I don't know if Bobby Webster knows. He knows more than the average person. He knows more than us, clearly, in terms of Masai, and they're very close. And I'm sure he's got an inkling one way or the other. But listen, if Masai ends up leaving, you know, this team could go down a different path. It's not going to take a complete left turn. Like, you know, Webster was hired and developed and grown under the tutelage of Masai. Like, that's the way he operates, and he I think thinks similarly in a lot of ways, and will look to control the team in a similar way. But what they do it for, we'll find out. You know, we'll find out in a month and a half. But
great.
It's a big jump in value from 7 to 4. There's a chance they flip the pick. There's a chance they move around. And one thing we've learned, and we learned it a long time ago, just because the general public or mock drafts are telling you this is what's going to happen, that's never the way it actually happens, ever.
Agreed.
So, you know, we're going to hear the names Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Jalen Green, Jalen Suggs. Those are the big four. Everyone's convinced they're going 1 through 4. I guarantee you someone will pop up and push one of them to 5.
I was laughing.
I like the guy from Gonzaga. That's my guy.
Suggs? That's your guy?
I was laughing last night because they were Cade Cunningham. I'm like, that's Rick Cunningham.
Rick Cunningham. Dwayne Casey's probably got him down in Detroit.
Exactly, your buddy. You can,
we got to get
that's
DC
good point,
on.
Brian.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, the voice
we got to get him on. We got to get
basketball.
Him on.
Dude, that's your deal. You're his boy. Like, call a guy.
Well, I'll shoot him a note. I should shoot him a note and say, hey, congrats. Although he's not going to tell us that they're taking Cade Cunningham. They're going to play
shoot
coy.
Him a note and say, Case, can you come on tomorrow? Give me 5 minutes. That's all you got to say.
Yeah, and like, what if he writes back and it goes, who's this? That's the worst.
That's what I would expect at this point. Maybe he's flipped his phone. He used to have a 416.
Dude, your buddy's with the guy. You got to be a big league guy. You got to say, Case, it's Brian Hayes from Toronto. Any chance you got 10 minutes on the radio tomorrow?
Hey, B, how you doing, buddy?
That is true. You guys are buddies, but I
– yeah.
Like, the thing is for the most part, we all have contacts, but sometimes they go haywire. Like, I had a number show up the other day, and I'm like, who the hell is this? Mm-hmm. And now you're concerned about it. And then you dial it, and for some reason, the contact comes up when you dial, but it's not on the text.
Yeah, see, I have no issue with someone saying, sorry, don't have this number, who are you? Like, very rarely do I text someone that I don't know well enough that would have my number. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that from an arrogant perspective. I'm saying I'm not texting a lot of random people.
Right.
So, but I'm okay with that. Yeah, fine. Oh, it's Brian Hayes. Hey. Oh, hey, what's up? I hate being on the opposite end of it when it's a number that is just talking to you, you know?
Right.
Oh, I think the Leafs will win tonight. I'm like, who is this? I have no idea. I'm like, how am I supposed to react? Because you just assumed that we're phone friends.
Well,
and at this point, I've had the same number for a long time, so I don't know what's up.
I got one the other day. Noodles, have a happy Father's Day. And I had no idea. I wanted to write back you too, but then...
What if it's a woman?
Yeah, what if it's a woman? What if it's like somebody who's young and single, doesn't have kids? Like,
right.
But don't you think that's like disrespectful? I didn't write
back
because
I was
like... I love
the classic line, new phone. Who's this?
And it's never a new phone.
No!
And with programs now, even if you get a new phone, everything comes with you now. Like, no one has to reload numbers. Remember in the early days of cell phones, you had to personally put numbers
brutal,
back in.
Brutal.
The worst process.
Piece of paper out of the drawer and start jotting stuff down on your phone.
Got to write all these down again. Like, whose number is this? All right, there's... Where do I draw the line on who I put back in?
And God forbid you drop your phone. There was no saving it or anything like that. No cloud to like that was it.
Gone.
Like I felt bad because I'm like, I somewhat recognize that number, but not really. And I may have saved that person's contact, but then it didn't save properly. So I don't know. So I should write it back saying,
give it a thumbs up. When in doubt, a thumbs up will always suffice.
What about this? Thumbs up, who dis?
No, I'm going to write it back right now and just go thumbs up, hope you're well.
No, dude, no.
Thumbs up, hope you're well is always good.
You think so?
It's always good. It always works. Always. All right. Brian Windhorst coming up. We'll get more into the NBA. Playoff P almost did it last night, but couldn't pull it off. What a finish
in
that
Suns game. What a play at the end of the game.
And 0.9 on the board and 8, and there's the first overall pick. Right, and that's an alley-oop inbound play. It was spectacular last night. You got to think the Clippers are clearly in big, big trouble. And Chris Paul is supposed to be back for Game 3. So we'll get to that. Back into the Euros. Back into the Habs win last night. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Brian Windhorst will join us in about 10 minutes. Kevin Kilbane will make his debut here. TSN soccer analyst, Irish international. He's played more games for the National Ireland soccer team.
Well, there's my only question I have for them. Like, Canada's not playing in these events. As a Flanagan O'Neill, How come I don't cheer for Ireland? How come they're never in these things?
They've been in them. They're
really?
Yeah, oh yeah, they've been in the Euros, they've been in the World Cup, but it's hit or miss, man. Outside
Dude,
of
they're not
boys,
a mainstay. They're not
no,
a
they're
mainstay.
Not even close. Not even close. There's like six or seven mainstays, not even. You know, it's Italy, Germany. Even Italy misses some big tournaments. Germany's there all the time, Spain, England generally, the Netherlands, Portugal.
Ireland should be a mainstay, let's just put it that way.
All right, well, I'm sure Kevin would agree with that, so we'll get his take on it. And there's some big matches coming up. England, Germany in the round of 16, Portugal, Belgium. Shout out. I mean, that's pretty quality stuff.
Yeah, there is.
We're guaranteed tickets through, right, Noodles? You've got Portugal and Belgium. I've got England and Germany, so one's going through.
I think Belgium's winning it all. I don't know why.
Watch out for Poland, boys. They will sneak up and bite you.
They might just sneak back into the round of 16. They're not currently there now, but they might find a way back in. Final hour coming up. Back into the Habs. Islanders, Tampa tonight in game two. Jays at Miami. What do we expect out of Robbie Ray and the tightest uniform in baseball tonight? Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. Online, TSN1050.ca.